Last week, Shaylee McKenzie, we had the wonderful Professor Fiona Moore in the studio with us, and she was keenly looking forward to thanking personally, once again, on air, the awesomeness that is Ilana Raine, was she not?
She was indeed.
Tragically, we couldn't get through to Ilana at all. We left various messages. We thought, what's going on there this week? We have rectified that. And Ilana's back with us. Yay, Ilana! Yay!
Bring me back!
And you join us on a programme which has a quartet of quality in full force. Not that we're neglecting some of our midweek drivettes who are out there, possibly the likes of Tessa Snart, who said, I can probably do a phone link if you can fit us in. Well, not this week, Tessa. You'll be back next week in any way, shape or form. It's way forward. Claire Margerison is joining us. But in the studio we have Shaylee McKenzie.
Hi.
Who's been doing some key research into you, Ilana, which we'll find out about in a few moments. We also have the awesomeness that is Andy Kerr.
Hi.
Exactly. Poet as well as academic and philosopher and somebody who, like yourself, Ilana, has sat through the entire 2.5 hours of Phil Dearness's The Truth Is Out There. Yeah, exactly. Most people have that slight nervous
laugh.
That's
wonderful.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, maybe we can, you know, talk about it for 2.5 hours together one day.
Yeah, it'll be a pleasure. I look forward to it.
It's one way of getting Ilana back across to the British Isles again. And Ben Lewis.
Good evening.
From Brighton.
Hello, Ben.
Hello, nice to meet you.
Brighton, of where it's been said, all things bright and beautiful.
Not the first minute.
I know.
It's probably not the last.
And exactly. And making her debut on the production today, a Level 3 English student reading science fiction and more, it's the fabulous Sarah Bryant.
Hello.
Hello, Sarah.
So, Shaylee, let's come to your good self, because you were quoting some research that you found out about the amazing Ilana Raine, and I think it's worth sharing with the world, and indeed Ilana herself, who can deny it.
Definitely.
At her... a whim, basically. Carry on.
Oh, definitely, Dane. What I'm really interested in, being an English grad, is the whole creative aspect within the art industry. And from your website, I saw that it says it's been written that Raine, you, is spearheading a new genre which blurs the line between science fiction and reality, and that her work demonstrates a profound hunger to connect through art. And I mean, that's just the ultimate goal of art, really, isn't it? That connection.
Oh, yes. That was written about my work, and it was just so wonderful to have someone put that into words. What I feel is one of the hallmarks of science fiction and why it's just a genre that is so relevant and has always been relevant is that it often in the past has addressed the biggest concerns we face as humans as we evolve on this planet, sometimes in a predictive way, the way H.G. Wells did, but also just in a way that addresses things that are core to our humanity through a lens that allows us a bit of fantasy and play, which allows people to get deep into a story that might not otherwise be open to them and accessible. You know, a lot of kids, they their gateway to literature is science fiction or comic books. And I think, you know, as AI is developing rapidly, as our lives are more intertwined with technology, I feel that there's so many important things that we need to address about which direction we're going, and to do it in a positive way, while being alert to, you know, potential apocalyptic and catastrophic things that could happen, but not to go too far in that direction, because in a way, if life imitates art, then in a way we're creating a future based on some very dystopian visions, and I'm not interested in being a part of that.
Interesting.
Keep it right, keep it real, keep it positive and optimistic.
Yeah. And I think art really, you know, we're responsible, we as artists and creators and writers, what we put into the world. And I'm not saying, oh, it all has to be rosy and shiny, but if indeed we are only witnessing dystopic visions and, you know, these massive Marvel movies, which can be fun, but, you know, they're bloodbaths. You know, so much gun violence, guns, guns, guns. You know, that we have to be mindful, like, even if it comes to, you know, well, how are we going to use violence in a film? Does it serve a purpose? Does it serve the narrative? What's the goal of it? Or is it just sheer sensory exploitation and, you know, pornography in a sense, violent pornography? So, you know, with the science fiction that I'm making, I just try to be very mindful of that because it has a real impact on our culture. So, you know, for instance, making a documentary about AI and about Cylons and Battlestar Galactica, you know, weaving in the cosmology of that show, you know, what relevance does that have to people's individual beliefs and cosmologies? And, you know, so I guess that's sort of what I'm interested in exploring with this new work, this new fiction work.
Because we have been here before and we will be here again. Andy.
Indeed.
Mm-hmm. I was watching the wonderful short film Ellipse in preparation for the show, and I couldn't help but notice, as an old kind of a student of what we call Western esotericism, whenever I was studying it in Amsterdam, the pervasiveness of esoteric themes in that particular short. So you get the reference to the Hermetic philosophy, as above, so below. You've got the Fibonacci sequence and the golden spiral in the stairway is walking up. To what extent are you adopting the sort of the general esoteric, one of the myriad of general esoteric worldviews, or do you feel as a creative person the ability just to, you know, lift little bits and insert them here and that kind of stuff, and to what extent do you expect your audience to get that?
Oh wow, that's a great question, and man, you're just such an ideal viewer of Ellipse. It's wonderful that you read so much into it. I mean, my goal is to have that depth, absolutely. I don't want to marginalize my work to the point where it's only accessible to a certain audience. I mean, you know, the esoteric, I think that there's definitely an audience there, but my goal is to address universal concerns, but layer it with little things like you just pointed out that add to the meaning, and it therefore can be addressed and enjoyed and experienced on multiple levels. Like I've had 8-year-olds look at Ellipse, and they take away something very different than what you just said, and it's meaningful to them. So, you know, I mean, there's a wonderful thing about making a film with, you know, I guess they call them Easter eggs, mm-hmm. appropriately for this week, where you go back and you watch something again, and it reveals itself in a different way each time. So I craft my work slowly, and I think that art should slow us down. And if we can watch a film once or twice, then, or even 3 times, we can learn more about ourselves from watching it by what we pick up.
Excellent.
Did that answer your question?
It does, absolutely. I just want to say I enjoyed watching it very much, and I highly recommend it to all you listeners out there in Siren FM land. What about the construction of the short story, the short film? Because another thing that fascinates me as someone who occasionally dabbles in writing short stories is this idea of I was always told to start as close to the end as possible and leave your reader wanting more. How does that connect with the construction of short films and the direction of short films? I mean, are they principles that you might have in mind, or is there a completely different rule book or set of guidelines, as it were? No such thing as rules for the short film.
I think there are. I mean, really, for the last 2.5 years, I've only been focusing on features, and I have about 4 complete screenplays now. Been just pretty much writing nonstop. You know, with Ellipse, when I was approached by Louis Savvy, who runs Sci-Fi London, and Mara Kukla, who is the public astronomer of the Royal Observatory, they're like, we want to make a science fiction film about an alien at the Royal Observatory. Can you write it? So I was given these
from the Sky News
wonderful parameters. Excuse me?
It's all right. We always say excuse me when they try to buzz in like that. We were just momentarily taken by looking at Sci-Fi London 2013, the Year of Ellipse, on our Facebook page.
Yeah. And just, well, you know, I mean, if someone, when Louis approached me with that story, I didn't even hesitate. I just started in my head writing it. I mean, what wonderful parameters to be given an alien at the Royal Observatory. So it evolved from there. But what I really was interested in, I felt like it could have been a feature, but indeed it had to be a short for budgetary reasons, time reasons. So I feel like I'm not in a position to talk about shorts now. My head is in features where it just allows so much more narrative exploration. But a short is a beautiful, compact way to just, you know, bite into some delicious story. And it's probably more challenging in a way than writing a feature, because you really have to cram it in to under 20 minutes. I mean, I think that a short really should be a short. You know, 3 minutes would be ideal, especially for film festival programmers. They love the shorter the better.
This is one of the reasons why, of course, for the first time this year, 3 years after the Year of Ellipse, actually 4 years after the Year of Ellipse, we've actually had Midweek Drivettes entering the 48-hour film challenge, or indeed, as our man would say...
You're listening to the Midweek Drive on Siren FM. My name's Louis Savvy, director of the Sci-Fi London Film Festival.
And yes, Ben, that is the same Louis Savvy we regularly speak to on a Thursday morning.
Superhero Savvy.
A superhero Savvy, because he saves lives these days, Ilana. You may not know this, he keeps it quiet, but he sort of helps people who actually trod on nails in London coffee shops.
That's great. It's long overdue. I get over there. But, you know, it's interesting about this short issue. I was invited to be a part of an art installation in New York. I just came back from a week in New York where I reconnected with some people from the art world that I used to be in. And they're putting together short of 100 filmmakers and video artists to reflect upon the current political situation now. And the show has a rather alarming title. It's called State of Emergency. And we were asked to come up with a one-minute clip, just 1 minute. And I found that to be a really interesting and challenging and frustrating exercise to, you know, pore over work. Like, what 1 minute can I pick from all of my work that is not a talking head talking about something political that sort of encapsulates, you know, where we are. So, you know, I'm in the middle of this process now with the curator, and it's I don't know, I think that we can all benefit as creative people to by distilling the essence of what we're trying to say and what is the most meaningful thing to us. And what we say, and, you know, and I think that mirrors how we, you know, some people, we try to maybe simplify our lives and decrease the clutter in our lives. And, you know, as creative people, I find that there's, you know, it goes hand in hand. What is the essence of what we're trying to do, what we're trying to say, what's our mission, what's our purpose?
Sarah, any thoughts from yourself?
I was actually just thinking, it's great how much consideration you put into the reception of your work, because I think quite often there's that kind of death of the author type vibe where people kind of create the work and then don't really consider its kind of birth into the public domain and how it's going to be received. So it's just really interesting to kind of hear your thoughts and kind of your gleanings on what and how it's going to be received by people and how it's going to impact society even.
In so many ways, yeah. We've actually had a whole... I mean, I'm just delighted that we finally had the term Fibonacci sequence and, indeed, hermeneutic philosophy employed within the show. Take that, Simon Mayo. Other radio programmes are available, but there we are. We'll just push those boundaries just a wee bit further.
Absolutely. Thank you. I mean, right now we're crafting a scene that there's some violence.
It's not gratuitous, is it, Ilana?
It is absolutely not, but when we first did our first pass, it woke me up at night. I was like, am I actually Now, if this went into production tomorrow and we filmed it and that's it, would I actually be? Would people see this as a comment on the things I find issue with, or am I just contributing to the problem? And it's a fine line, and I think we just have to be very mindful of that. And you know, the whole filmmaking business out here, again, it's so different than when I was in New York as an artist working on my own stuff, my own timetable, you know, obviously on a smaller budget because it was just me. So maybe in a way that this, all this time, the time it takes to get a project off the ground, to have it developed, how many revisions you have to read, you know, what other choice do I have except to be aware of what is being created? So, you know, I'm trying to spin this whole, you know, glacial speed of production in Los Angeles in a way to make it work for me.
And that is one of the reasons why we always appreciate the connectivity that we actually have with Alana, because it leads us to transcend to a whole new level. Shaylee, I think you can put the last two questions to Alana before we head off to Professor Fiona Moore doing her stuff somewhere in Staines in London.
Alana, have you enjoyed your telephonic connection with us today?
Oh, absolutely. I love speaking with you guys, and I won't go AWOL next time.
Good. And the next one is, will you be joining us anytime soon?
I'd love to, yes.
Brilliant. Alana Rain will return. Yay!
Yay!
Say you'd see me soon, but you're as silent as the moon. You could say let's start again, but you think of other men. And I wonder if I ever knew the more elusive inner you. For the buttons of your mind were difficult to find, and my fingers far too clumsy.
featuring Roger McGough, of course. The Scaffold, Buttons of Your Mind. The B-side, in case you're interested, to a tune called Lily the Pink. A B-side, of course, was when we used to have vinyl, and records had A-sides and B-sides. Of course, they still do these days. National Record Day coming up, I believe, in the not-too-distant future. Probably April 22nd. Anyway, last week, of course, as Shaley and Andy will attest to, we had amongst the octet of... I was going to say octet of, but I've suddenly lost the sort of plot there. Octet of
just...
Yes, yeah. I was looking for alliteration, you see, Fiona. But anyway, Professor Fiona Moore was with us. We thankfully managed to put to bed the Lana Rain contact scenario there. We've managed to address that, so all's good with her. She sends her very best, even though she didn't verbalise it as such. I mean, she did. I sensed the whole thing was implied from that point of view. But we have Ben Lewis, we have Andy Kerr, we have, making a debut on the production, Sarah Bryant and Shaley McKenzie. In the house, so to speak, all desperately keen. Well, apart from Sarah, who's not really a Doctor Who fan, and probably Ben as well, who's not necessarily at home.
Used to be ex Doctor Who fan,
exactly.
Back in the wagon,
but exactly, Andy. Well said. Get back on that wagon. Get on that horse and drink that milk. But Shaley, who watched the opening sequence of the pilot, and Andy, who I think also saw the opening sequence of the pilot, and said, well, that's exactly what all academics live like. We have officers like that on a regular basis. Mm-hmm. We can do pretty much what we wish, and we can always keep a telephone box in the corner of our office.
Absolutely, play Beethoven's Fifth.
Wouldn't it be so nice? Has anybody here in the studio like inside number 9 as well?
Well, obviously, I'll put my hand up because of Graham Harper and Sarah. Yes. And yes.
The one about the crossword puzzles, you know, where Victor Pemberton's a Cambridge academic who writes crossword puzzles as a hobby. I was looking at those rooms and going, I wish.
Exactly. But let's not go into the crossword puzzle episode too much because it has a very sharp ending. Precisely. And I know we've currently pulled up an image of your good self, Fiona, with our very own Ed Wellman. And behind, of course, Ed, we have Alan Stevens hiding there. We'll speak to Alan from The Forest of Dean in a matter of moments, as well as the whole range of other actors. And Katie Grimmison, of course, who's still living in Birmingham. It's all right, Katie. Somebody has to. Sorry. Graduated a few years ago from American Studies.
Well, I've come from Birmingham, so...
Well, you see, there we are, and it was still standing when you left, at least. Obviously, the weeping and gnashing of tears that we can actually hear emerging from the ether now is indeed the fact that Birmingham are lamenting the fact that Fiona's actually headed off. Let's stop going off on a tangent, etc. Andy, what did you make of the opening of Peter Capaldi's final season as the Doctor?
Well, I enjoyed the progressive nature of the storyline, shall we say. I enjoyed the first bars of Beethoven's Fifth played on the electric guitar.
Nice.
And the rest of it I thought was distinctly average.
Shaley McKenzie.
I have to admit, the CGI was a bit naff.
A CGI was naff. Well, yeah. No, I mean, what about the story? I felt that the Nardoli line was telegraphed before we even saw Nardoli enter into the office, but still.
Yeah, it was a bit, you knew what was coming. It wasn't...
Mm. Including the Morvellans, you know, from Destiny of the Daleks. Did that not have a little tweak of saying, oh, look, it's the Morvellans?
Maybe a bit, yeah.
I believe it excited David J. Howe, but perhaps we best not go there. Fiona, it's over to you. What did you make of the opening in the new series of Doctor?
Well, I quite liked it, actually, and I thought the whole Dalek sequence was actually a bit of a good bait and switch because, you know, the trailer had... shown us, scenes from that sequence, you know, a strange girl saying exterminate and Morvellans, being shot, and you have no idea how it fits, and now suddenly, of course, it all makes sense. And, I kind of like the non-linear side of it. I think Pearl Mackey is great. I like Bill. Academics do not have offices like that, and especially not in the University of Bristol, but on the other hand... the Doctor is the Doctor, and, if he wants to kind of fantasize about his ideal academic life, presumably he's got the pseudoscience wherewithal to make it happen.
Wouldn't it be nice if our universities just let us do whatever we wanted.
You mean you mean you don't have that experience, Andy? I'm astounded. You know, it's amazing. I'm intrigued by a post that Fiona made 4 English hours ago, or in the words of Gerry Anderson, 4 terrestrial hours ago, or terranean hours, of the new library on campus. Now, is this the Royal Holloway London University Library that we've actually got here? If a robot's library was inspired by a swan, I suspect this one was inspired by a sandworm.
Yes, it is. It's worth Googling Robarts Library, actually. That's the main library at the University of Toronto. And it's an impressive thing, but it's basically a representation. It is vaguely swan-shaped, but in brutalist architecture, which means that most people liken it to a turkey rather than a swan. Mm. But nonetheless, you know, the effort is impressive. However, as I said, as this thing's been taking shape, you know, I've been looking out my window at it day on day, seeing it get bigger and browner and more sinuous, and I can think of is sandworm, you know? I'm sorry.
That was something that surely the Doctor Who episode had in common with both Royal Holloway, London, and indeed the University of Lincoln, that actually we look out of our windows and we see building. We see lots of building going on. Building there. Just be careful that you don't look into the puddles in Lincoln, otherwise who knows what could happen.
Yes, I think anywhere in a university at the moment, you look out the window and you see building. I tend to avoid looking in the puddles on campus. Who knows what I might see?
Exactly. And that, Ben, is why you should check out Peter Capaldi's opening episode in his last season as the Doctor.
You've swayed me, Alex. You've swayed me.
I might have done. Really did. Now, normally with Fiona and Alan, you get kind of good cop, bad cop. Normally they fight over the telephone, but we've separated them this time around because Alan is in the Forest of Dean. Obviously, Fiona is in Staines, looking after Aisha and Zhukov, etc. No spoilers, please, Fiona, because we don't want to know how the Stevensmeister actually returns to let him have his own time on this basis. I think it's fair to say that if we were actually using the Hannah Brown mode of Richard Fitzwilliam's classification here, you would have a smiley face emoji to actually sort of express your thoughts about the first episode of Doctor Who. Is that a fair comment?
Oh, yes, definitely fair.
Smiley face. Okay, that's good.
As for the cats, Zhukov is currently guarding me.
As of course, cats are prone to do, as we know in so many ways and so on. Sarah, I know you've waited for this moment since you started the programme 1 hour and 17 minutes ago. It's time for you to ask those last two questions to Professor Fiona Moore.
How wonderful.
Exactly. Sarah, go.
Do forgive me, Fiona, but have you enjoyed your telephonic connection with us today?
Absolutely. It's always too short.
Oh, well, in that
case... That's why she did the full two-hour show last week, you see. More Fiona for the full two-hour shows. Exactly.
In that case, I assume we can be hearing from you soon?
Oh, absolutely. And you may even be seeing me in person again, depending on how Alex can make the schedule work.
And that's what we spend our time doing, just making that schedule work.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
believe that some of our breakfast show team, Kai and Chris, actually, in trailing this show ahead earlier this morning, Andy said we spend a lot of time talking about science fiction. I don't know where they get that impression from at all, really. It's very strange and most peculiar, but still. And never mind. We've had, so far, the views of Fiona Moore. We've had the views of Andy Kerr. It was kind of meh. Is that right?
Meh. Yeah, average. My girlfriend, who doesn't like Doctor Who, said it was okay.
All right, yeah, well.
So that's a pretty positive.
Praise indeed. Sarah, you did watch it.
No.
Understandable, you're too focused on RUR and Time Machine and consciousness raising and such like stuff, and rightly so. Sheila, you're kind of, or Shaylee, I should say. Shaylee, it's all right. Shaylee, more of a kind of, share Andy's thing, or you didn't like the CGI?
I didn't like the CGI, but I guess the thing that I did like is that this is the first gay female companion, isn't it, for Doctor Who?
Unless you include Frobisher the Penguin, who obviously is a part of the Doctor.
Which I find kind of interesting.
Mm. Okay, and Ben has still not got back on the Doctor Who bandwagon.
No, I left it back in 2009, exactly. Once David Tennant was pretty much gone. I think it was 2011, it was somewhere around then. But once David Tennant left, I was pretty much a goner.
Critically, what does Alan Stevens make about this? I mean, Alan, I don't know if you've heard Fiona, you probably have already communicated with Fiona. We'd expect them to speak to
each other. I obviously spoke to each other before your telephone interview today, but I didn't hear the interview because I'm in the Forest of Dean, you see.
Yes,
I don't have wireless here.
No, exactly. Well, so what were your considered views as a Doctor Who scholar and indeed key contributor to Warp magazine? I know I don't do it as well as Hannah Brown does, but you know, it's important.
Warp, doesn't she?
She does. She has copyrighted that, and we'll look forward to receiving her Warp in days to come. What did you make of the pilot?
Well, it's interesting. I was having a conversation, well, if you call it a conversation, on Facebook with someone who was, this is before the pilot was shown, was defending current Doctor Who. And he was pointing out how, this is interesting, how the camera work is better now and the effects are better now than they were when the show first appeared or reappeared in 2005. And I was kind of had that in mind when watching the new one because, of course, there was a lot of it was basically Rose again, wasn't it? You know, the if you look at Rose, the first story that launched
even with chips to the fore. Did you notice
reference? Chips were in it, and you know, it's basically but on the other hand, it was technically far superior to Rose. If you look at Rose, it looks like something from children's TV, really.
And you had plastic autons, let's face it, you know.
Yeah, but there wasn't... that story was about, you know, introducing Rose to the Doctor and explaining, you know, why they were going to work or giving, you know, sort of groundwork there and also explaining the Doctor's relationship to, you know, the Time War at the time. And this story was very much, again, along the same similar lines. She was looking for something. She meets this girl who's then becomes part of this machine, and wherever they go, it's there. So it's a bit like the Doctor, you know. He goes to Australia, and she is there. And she goes to an alien planet in different time, and she's there again. So there's a kind of symbiotic connection there, and they're you know, it's nothing new, but they're saying that the Doctor and the companion, you know, she's with him for a reason that she probably doesn't know what it is yet, and he in a way needs her because you know, it's for the audience anyway, it's a kind of window into his world. So if you connect with Bill, then you connect with the series. And I think over the last few years, people haven't really, well, I don't know, a lot of fans have complained at the show, and I think probably they didn't really connect with Clara was more of a sort of walking plot device than an actual character, whereas although you could say that you know, there was a lot of plot about Billy or Bill, it's character-driven plot as opposed to, you know, this thing happened because isn't that exciting, explosion, whatever. So I think that, you know, that they've kind of gone back to the roots of the show and looked at why it was working and possibly why it stopped working and addressed it. So, yeah, I think it was pretty good. It was certainly the best episode I've seen for a long time. I mean, last series, I did find it quite difficult to watch, to be honest. I wasn't really engaged at all. I don't know what you mean by CGI. I mean, for television, the CGI was very good. For cinema, it's less good. But, you know, cinema usually spends billions of dollars, don't they, on films and CGI effects, whereas, you know, BBC have got a lot less to go by. So there's my penny's worth.
Has that helped you possibly try it out, Sarah? I mean, is that from what? Because it claims that both Alan and Fiona are giving it a thumbs up, it would seem. A return to its roots, a kind of return, a preparation for when Chris Chibnall takes over the mantle after having destroyed Broadchurch. Although apparently the episode that concluded Broadchurch was...
Don't tell me anything mentioning about that, because I'm actually watching at the moment.
Oh.
And I've only watched three episodes. If the entire place is blown up, a nuclear explosion, I want to look forward to that, as opposed to it spoiled by someone.
It's only very small Broadchurch nuclear explosion.
Broadchurch is an interesting... It could mean, you know, as in that Series 3 is even worse than Series 2.
Well, exactly. Yeah. But anyway, Sarah.
I think maybe I'd be interested in it if it became a bit less heteronormative.
A bit less heteronormative. Well,
yeah.
I think the sign's already there that it has.
Yeah,
so
it's
there we are.
There.
Yeah, exactly. And Andy, are you reappraising your thoughts now on the sequence?
No. I have my opinion and I'm sticking to it. I'm looking forward to the next one. And I liked what they did at the end. I normally switch off when they introduce, you know, the key themes of the next episode, so that I'm surprised. But I didn't get there in time this time. And what they did is they did a little taster of the whole season to come. Which I thought was a nice thing for engaging.
It's the original Cybermen. The original Cybermen have come back in their original costumes. Will they have their high-pitched voices as well?
I don't know. We haven't heard them yet, have we?
Nicely said. Ben, would you like to put those last two questions to...
Well, actually, can we just address this heteronormative thing? Because, I mean, the producer of Doctor Who... Well, in fact, the current producer of Doctor Who is heterosexual. The previous one before that was... gay, and the one before that was gay, and certainly there was a lot of gay characters and gay themes introduced into the show in 2005. So I don't know. I mean, it's a lot of television is heteronormative, but I would say Doctor Who on that spectrum was less than a lot of programs, and it seems a bit strange to say, well, I won't watch it because it's not quite as heteronormative as I don't know what our other programs are. Not heteronormative.
I think maybe heteronormative is perhaps the wrong word.
He's bounced it right back at you, Sarah.
I think perhaps what I was aiming at was more the kind of male doctor female sidekick dynamic, which is really kind of getting quite old now. So maybe a kind of lady doctor would be a bit more interesting and a bit more relatable.
Well, we have a lady master coming up.
Mistress,
Missy, yes,
and she
is the arch nemesis, who was formerly always a male character, and her recent incarnation is there.
But fundamentally, Andy, you know, this is all well and good, but Ben is going to get very annoyed if he can't ask those last two questions. So.
They're bursting out. I mean, that's the thing.
Exactly.
It's built up over the last 2 minutes.
It was a thing to behold, Alan. Honestly, the studio just had to hold him back. I mean, you know, Shaley had to physically hold Ben down and restrain him. No.
Gag him.
Yeah, it's good to go.
It's not quite like that, Alan, but...
Kinky.
Have you enjoyed your...
In a heteronormative way. What, sorry?
Yeah, have you enjoyed your tenderfoot lip with us today on the show?
Yeah, it was all right, yeah.
Smashing. Will we see you again sometime soon?
Do you know, I don't reckon he's following a script, you know. I think he's making... I think he's working on a theme here. Yeah, I'm sure you'll see me again on radio soon.
Very apt, as we thought we were going to Claremont Gerrison in Kent. We find we've dialed the number of Holly McGrattan. How are you, Holly?
Hello.
In which case, we say congratulations on your upcoming wedding, which is fantastic. It's Holly Parker, a young lady who actually was sort of in a similar position to yourself, Shaylee, and indeed Sarah. She also was a level 3 English student, and she wasn't expecting this at all, basically. We thought it was... For some reason, I've actually got Holly Parker's telephone number written down here, and I have dialed it. Clearly, I felt drawn to, because you were also a science fiction aficionado. And Holly, how is life treating you since graduating with a first-class distinction from the University of Lincoln, and how's the PhD going?
Oh, well, I'm still applying for that, so yeah, fingers crossed on that one. But yeah, life's really good, thank you. What a surprise.
Yeah, sometimes we just randomly dial up a number and we have... It's very strange, very strange.
Alex, cold calling.
Oh, it says navigation.
Yeah, well, you know, there we are. Holly, I'm going to put these two questions to you because I think you know what they are. Have you had a reasonably interesting, albeit short and brief, telephonic link with us on the programme this evening?
Interesting is definitely the word I would use to describe it, yes.
So after a gap of 2.5 years, will you be able to return in the not-too-distant future?
Hopefully, with a bit more preparation.
A little bit more notification, a little bit of scenario for that. It's amazing. Anyway, and can we have a round of applause for Holly, who has accepted the proposal of nuptials. She's tied the knot, and the proposal took place in Gdansk in Poland. It's amazing. Would you like to name your fiancé, please, Holly?
Richard.
There we are, you see.
Richard Van
Der Steen,
if you want a blooming
puffy
name.
There we are. It's like keeping the midweek drive at family happy. Happy trails, Holly. See you very soon. Take care.
Thank you. Bye.
And it looks as though we probably won't be able to connect to Claire Margerison unless she's actually answered the phone now. Claire Margerison, are you there? No, clearly she's not. We thought the moment was going to be there, but that signal which she was worried about has clearly manifested itself. But no, at least we featured Holly Parker, so that's all good. We can always be better. We've got Phil Dearness that's coming up in a matter of moments. And then life continues. Are you ready, Andy, to actually quiz Phil more on The Truth Is Out There?
I am looking forward to it. I've got my thumb screws at the ready.
As you know, he was set and ready to actually do that when, of course, he was unceremoniously kidnapped in more ways than one, really.
Isn't this twice as well now? Because it was last week and the week before. Mm.
But he did a very good weather forecast reading on the Midweek Drive Morning Edition, which indeed, hopefully, he'll do tomorrow via Skype as well. Mm. Amazing. because, Ben, sometimes life is like that. Those horses, they just go crazy because they're you and I. They've all got owners, you know.
Well, what would two if I ended up in a lasagna?
There we are. Phil Linus, welcome to the production. We're just trying to sort out details with respect to connecting with you via Skype. So what we'll probably do in a few seconds is take a short musical break, and then Ryan Jones can come in, sort his magic out, and then magic things will happen. Have you caught any of the programme today, or were you simply...
I think I just caught a few seconds of the Osmond's Crazy Horses. Is that true?
Yes, you did. Mm-hmm. You did indeed.
So here's the last time I heard that was I was the proud owner of that record, and I brought it over to my neighbor's house where I was babysitting their young kids. I was a young kid myself. I was, I don't know how old, fourth, fifth grade maybe in the 1970s. And I was babysitting, and I put that record on. It's the Osmonds, for crying out loud. And I was disinvited from ever babysitting again because of that devil music that I had put on.
Well, they are Mormons. Andy, let's not beat around the bush. What sort of things do you want to talk about with Phil Nearness regarding the joys of the truth is out there?
Talk about the Osmonds and Mormonism in the
shall we put it to the vote, Ben? But truth is out there, or the Osmonds and crazy horses and Mormonism?
Any.
Sarah?
The latter.
The latter. And Shaylee?
Crazy horses.
Fine. Carry on, Andy.
Okay,
so we'll talk about the truth is out there, because I find myself on just a powder keg surrounding the big news stories of the day here in America because of footage I own from the truth is out there. So I can't wait to share all that with you.
Go on.
Interesting.
Yes, you can't leave us hanging there on the horns of a cleft stick, you know, for goodness sakes.
I thought we were about to go to a musical thing. You said that was my, that was the old FM DJ in me, hinting, and then we go to another track from the Osmonds. No, we're not doing that. Okay.
Applause for Ryan Jones, who's managed to connect Phil Linus via Skype.
Woo! Legend!
In so many words, legend and Ryan Jones just slot together like three magical words. Phil, welcome back to the programme via Skype.
Well, I feel like it's a whole different show. I mean, the sounds on the Skype are much better than the transatlantic cable that I'm using for the landline.
Well, there we are. It's in preparation.
I feel like I'm in the room with you.
Well, funny you should say that, because Shaylee does not believe you exist. In fact, your official words were, is he a brain in a box?
Oh, Alex, that was between me and you.
It It's just sharing with Phil Leonis, who is a brain in a box, just a humanoid box that manages to move around quite a lot, which is very good.
Excellent.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting, yeah.
Anyway,
yeah.
Andy, would you like to continue the truth is out the discussion you were having?
Oh, well, yes, absolutely. So we were talking about you keeping your own opinions out of recording all of these wonderful accounts of various forms of experience and psychological phenomena. I was wondering if you could comment a little bit more on the kind of the antagonism to the status quo that comes through in all of these stories, and possibly its connection with Renaissance esotericism, if you're familiar with that kind of concept.
I've always wanted to throw in Renaissance esotericism.
Yeah, well, I
to
mean,
Phil.
It was the Renaissance movement. Whenever this kind of opposition to the status quo really formulated itself in these kinds of more accounts of sort of, let's say, spiritual experiences or alternative experiences. Before that, there wasn't so much of an antagonism with the status quo, but within the 20th and into the 21st century, that antagonism has really come out, and that's one of the things that I saw from your documentary.
Well, I think that you're actually maybe combining two different responses to the status quo into one, and I think that Renaissance philosophy actually is present and emerges in the film through the artist Lee McCloskey, through Marilyn Schlitz at the Institute of Noetic Science, these thinkers who take a fairly enlightened view that the status quo overlooks that all of cultural history is our shared inheritance, and that the status quo's job is not to necessarily nourish us. Rather, it's to create the confines and the constructs against which we push off to create space for our own unique inquiry and conversation. And so it isn't what was the word that you used? An antagonism so much as a healthy pushing off point. Like one of the people said, I think it's Dr. Nicky Monti in my film, says it's like the chicken and the egg. You can't help the chicken peck its way out of the egg. The chicken has to peck its way out or it will die. And our creative impulses need something to push off against. And that would be the status quo. On the other hand, yes, there's this great antagonism in the film towards the status quo, especially embodied by one person I want to talk about today, because he's very much in the news here in the U.S. right now. And he is someone whose inclusion in my film I was very much under fire for on Your Fair Shores. And but that kind of antagonism that I want to discuss is, to me, born out of feelings of powerlessness. And feelings of antagonism, anger, violence, so often are inspired by feelings of powerlessness. And instead of looking inward and finding ways to empower ourselves in our vulnerability, we blame others for our feelings of powerlessness. The good news is so many of these people use that as inspiration to proceed with inquiry into various investigations and to tell stories about those investigations, and that's all commendable until their inquiry and their investigations lead them to conclusions that plunge them into even greater darkness and powerlessness than the status quo. One of these purveyors of these kind of stories is Alex Jones, who is prominent in the documentary The Truth Is Out There, and as I alluded to, about whom I was under great fire for including when I showed the film there in England. I was asked, isn't it dangerous to give someone like Alex Jones even more of a platform than he had before? And I come from a land that prides itself on this battle to preserve and maintain freedom of speech. And I would never presume to say that giving someone the opportunity to speak is not dangerous. Indeed, it might be. However, I know from my country's history, from my personal history, from my family history, whenever we seek to repress or suppress speech, that's always dangerous, because that which is repressed and suppressed will come up to the surface eventually, and it will do so at altogether the wrong time. And I tried to point out 6-7 years ago that if we don't pay attention to what people like Alex Jones are saying, this is going to start driving the cultural conversation in really unfortunate waves. And flash forward to Donald Trump becoming president and Alex Jones having that man's ear, indeed in some ways helping to get him elected, and in some ways finding his own conspiracy theories echoed by our president. Well, Alex Jones all of a sudden finds himself the subject of many headlines he does not want, because he's in a very messy custody battle with his ex-wife, who's seeking full custody of all three of their children because, according to her and her lawyers, he is insane and a madman. Look at all the crazy things he believes. And they are using all his shows against him. His defense in this, which is something else I tried to show in the film, and I have even more footage with which I will be showing this in part two, is the possibility that the whole thing was an act to begin with, that he was exploiting a segment of the population that would believe these things, even though he did not himself, that he is, in effect, a performance artist, a huckster, a con man. And so anyway, getting back to your question, long story long, I think that that follows a different thread. It's one not out of any kind of Renaissance sense of hereticism that is seeking to push off against the constraints of the status quo so much as one that's seeking to blame the status quo for their feelings of powerlessness. Did that at least make sense?
It did. That made absolute sense to me indeed.
Shaylee, you were nodding quite significantly during that. Any thoughts from yourself?
Nodding so much my head almost fell off. I guess I'm just really interested in your thoughts on Donald Trump, obviously being an English woman. We've not experienced the
Wait
kind
a minute.
Of...
Donald Trump is an English woman?
Hey.
Now, see, that is a theory I had not heard before. I had, of course, heard that Obama was an African Muslim, but I've never heard that Trump was a... How did he get to be president when he's an English woman? Okay, I'm sorry. Go on.
Lots of plastic surgery. Anyway, I'm just really interested in your views. Living in England, obviously, we only hear what the media portrays and wants us to hear. And I guess the kind of vibe that I pick up on is this sort of echo chamber of fear-mongering amongst citizens in America. I mean, can you pertain to that, or will you be executed?
Here's the thing. If you criticize our president right now, if you fundamentally disapprove of him, you are in the vast majority, as it turns out. It is a crazy thing to think that we're in a country right now where only 35% of the people approve of the job our president is doing. That is an all-time low for a president this soon into his tenure. In fact, only, I think, two presidents in the 20th century onward have ever at any point had lower approval ratings. So it's fairly safe ground to travel in terms of criticizing Trump. It doesn't mean he won't directly tweet angry things at me later today, which he very well might. But
after all, Kim Jong-un can only help certain people along the way.
I think that there's an opportunity in everything, and this is my view. And it takes a long time to talk people off the ledge when they hear me say this first thing, but I think it is better in the long run, potentially, for our country, for the world, that Donald Trump won rather than Hillary, for two major reasons. One, because the hatred and animosity towards Hillary Clinton in some quarters was such that she was not going to accomplish anything. There would have been complete gridlock for the next 4 years. When she would have been defeated in re-election. And we can't withstand 4 years of gridlock. And I hear people saying, oh, but what Trump is seeking to do is so much worse. However, what I think the main opportunity is it forced to the foreground conversations that we are now having that Dean and I tried to tackle 6 years ago, which is how do you know what the truth is when you can find almost violent disagreement over supposed sets of facts?
The truth is out there, after all.
Exactly.
And so we're finally facing that as a culture, which is we need to get together and we need to agree on sets of facts. We can always disagree on how to achieve the aims that we think we like, the means to get there, but we've got to get back to what unites us, what binds us. And that conversation has been sped up because of this, and I think we will all be better in the long run. The other element behind it is, I hope, and I continue to try to be a voice for this, and I'm going to start a new radio show that is born out of this observation, that when it became apparent on a road trip to Lily Holland and myself a year ago that Donald Trump was going to win the election, it was because we drove through so much of the United States that does not get exposure on the media, and for whom this Trumpian refrain, "Make America Great Again," sounded like a promise to restore their relevance. To large quarters, of course, the phrase "Make America Great Again" was offensive. It was racist. It was so many other things. But to a large swaths of our population who have seen the economic recovery pass them by, who are living in towns that look post-apocalyptic, where there haven't been jobs in forever, they heard "Make America Great Again," and they saw, oh, opportunity might come back. And these people's stories needed to be shared. And these are people who share a lot in common with the people who vote against Donald Trump. So again, I think there's the opportunity for us to actually listen to our stories as citizens of this planet, as opposed to the stories being foisted upon us by political parties that make hay out of divisiveness. I hope that answered your question somewhat.
Or indeed, as our transcendental soul would actually say, Ben Lewis, probably the best reason to visit Brighton there's ever been. Ben, thoughts?
Yeah,
I don't like that you made me say the word Ben twice in one sentence. But other than that,
I love it.
All right, as long as you love it.
Oh, of course I do.
Do your parents like it, Ben?
I think they do. Oh, the general consensus is
firstborn child. It's important.
Indeed. Yeah, Phil.
Couldn't I have said the best reason to visit Brighton that there will ever be? Wouldn't that be possible?
Ooh, remix.
I don't know. Version. I feel like the Ben kind of plays on it though, doesn't it?
Exactly.
All right. Okay. All right.
Yeah.
If people what they want, you know, that's the...
Listen, Phil, we've still got to work on the Shaley McKenzie ident and possibly a Sarah Bryant one in future weeks, so heaven only knows where we're going with that one. Don't get me started on Holly McGrattan as well. Anyway, carry on, Ben.
Yeah, I've got a couple of points, Phil. I'm quite interested in Alex Jones in particular. I followed him quite recently. I say quite recently, probably about the last 6 months. But I've been really interested in some of the content that he produces, and I find it very interesting, his perspective on not just political situations, but in situations in general, about how the media mainly portray things in particular. And I don't know, are you a big fan of InfoWars at all? I don't know if you've know that at all.
Dean and Alex were friends for a long, long time. And he witnessed a major change in Alex Jones and InfoWars over the last few years. And interestingly enough, from what is coming out of investigations here now, InfoWars was one of the major sites used in disinformation campaigns to spread false materials that possibly other governments wanted us to spread to diminish faith in democratic institutions. And this coincides, interestingly enough, with Dean feeling like, wow, something's really changed with Alex Jones. Indeed, one of the things we've talked about on our show is this whole almost vitriolic nationalism that Alex Jones has expressed and espoused, which there is a fervent, though thank goodness, minority group that embraces in this country. But this idea that globalism ran rampant is obviously not alone to Alex Jones, and it's something many of us could understand and agree with to various extents.
Phil, but we're going to have to pick this up tomorrow morning, or at least midnight.
I'll have a really good chat with this. I could have a good chat with you tomorrow morning,
Phil,
about this.
We will do that when Phil becomes the weather forecaster and the weather girl for Gibraltar, for London, for Lincoln, and all sorts of things. Midnight in Los Angeles. Think about it as Wednesday proceeds. You're going to have a cracking time, Phil. I know, I sense that.
But this audience right here, can I have 10 seconds?
Yes.
10 seconds.
Yes.
The thesis is this, that the answer to globalism, if globalism is the ill, the answer to globalism is not nationalism. It's individual liberties. And Alex always seemed like a champion of individual liberties. And recently, there has been very much a championing of nationalism over individual liberties.
Sarah Bryant, have you enjoyed your first midweek drive?
I have indeed.
Ben?
I have, yeah. I'm going to have to pick this up with you tomorrow morning, Phil.
Or indeed midnight in Los Angeles.
Yes.
Andy?
Yes, always great.
Shaylee?
Always a pleasure, Phil.
Thanks
Never
to Cameron. Thanks to Anna Lewis. Thanks to Elliot Morris. Thanks to Ilana Rain, Alan Stevens and Fiona Moore. And Holly Parker for a special bonus that she wasn't even expecting herself. That's it. We're out of here. All sorts of great things coming up on Lincoln's First Community Radio Station. That's Siren FM. Can we say bye-bye?
Bye.
Bye-bye.
I watch you look at me, watch my feet are growing, I know just who I am. And how many corners do I have to turn? How many times do I have to run? All the love I have is in my mind. I hope you understand.